I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the cause to die to be. If you don't love it, lead it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a part of dive. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying peace. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me.
That's Merle Haggard and The Fighting Side of Me. And this is Paul Fromm. You're on The Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. But lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, today, August the 9th was a good day for immigration reformers here in Toronto. We staged a protest outside of the constituency office of Ahmed Hassan. Now, if that name does not immediately ring a bell in your head, don't blame you. Ahmed Hassan is a grinning, bald guy. He's a Somali. He's a Muslim. Let me think. He's an immigration lawyer, and he is the former president of the Canadian Somali Association. All right, so he's an immigration Somali lobbyist and a Muslim. Fine. He's also, unfortunately, our Minister of Immigration. I know. Yes, and the Canada the Trust Fund kid, the globalist loyal servant of George Soros, Soros, of course, being an enemy, mortal enemy of the white people. Our Canada's Minister of Immigration is a Somali Muslim. Yes. Well, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, of course. But when he was appointed, I pretty much predicted it would be like putting a drop-down alcoholic in charge of the liquor store, or in charge of the liquor cabinet. You'll probably see a fair deal of that disappear. If guarding it is the purpose, they're probably not going to achieve it that way. Anyway, Mr. Ahmed Hassan was not appointed by the trust fund kid to protect our borders, just the opposite. Here we have a person already predisposed to letting in hordes of people and illegals. I mean, after all, he himself came here at the tender age of 16. And I'm curious about that, because coming from Somalia, then in a state of civil war, and much just where the militias were mostly young men addicted to cot, that's a leafy drug that they chew, like Latin Americans, or I mean Peruvians, chew coca leaves, and it produces a high. Nobody has ever said, actually, was he at all involved in the Civil War? We don't know. He would have been of the right age, but not making any accusations. Anyway, Ahmed Hassan came to Canada, got a law degree, affiliated himself with the Liberal Party, worked closely with the provincial Liberals at Queen's Park, and moved on up in Liberal circles. And he came to the attention of the Trust Fund Kid, our Prime Minister. And he was duly brought in, given a riding to run in, which was York South. It's a largely Italian, old Italian district, but with a lot of third world, mostly black residents, many of them in welfare housing. Anyway, he won in the 2015 election, and lo and behold, he became our Minister of Immigration early this year. What has he done? Well, he is, what would you expect? If you put a drunk in charge of the liquor cabinet, do you seriously expect he won't take the odd nip or 10? You do? No, I don't think you do either. Well, what's happened under this manifestly unqualified person? And you know, it's symbolic. It's symbolic of the abuse of the Canadian people and of the contempt with which the globalist lobby hold us, that they would do this to us. I warned people, and much as I wish I'd been wrong, I wasn't. So our protest was outside the offices of Ahmed Hassan, and the purpose of our protest was to say that we strongly disagree with what's being done. We strongly disagree with the fact that our southern border is being invaded from the United States. No, not by Americans, but by, mostly Haitians, but not only. We've had 7,000 come up in the months of July and August. We're now near the end of the, well, we're 9 days into September. I don't think they're up-to-date figures yet, but they continue to come. And what has Ahmed Hassan, who's supposed to stand on guard for Canada, what's he done? I'll tell you. They're monitoring the situation. Well, you've got to understand politically correct newspeak. Monitoring the situation means we're sitting on our bums and doing nothing. It doesn't mean we're even watching the situation. We're just not doing anything. But to the uninitiated, it sounds as though they are. We're monitoring the situation. Sounds like, oh, we're doing something. No, precisely the opposite. They're doing nothing. Well, they had a couple of consultations. That's not the same thing as doing anything. That's, your house is burning, and your neighbors are going to monitor the situation. What does that mean? Well, they're going to stand around and wait for the fire engines to show up. You're screaming, my cat's inside being roasted. Can anybody help me? Your neighbors look on with concern, and they monitor the situation and have another beer. They don't help you. That's monitoring the situation. And your activist neighbors, if that were happening, would grab buckets, fire extinguishers if they had them, pull on their hoses and come pouring over to help you, try to douse a little bit of the fire so you can rescue your cat. That's the difference between action and monitoring the situation. We don't need the situation monitored. We need the border closed or the border secure. Anyway, So the invasion started last December, but picked up in when mostly they were coming up through North Dakota into and many of these people were Ghanaians or Nigerians, and they were coming up into Manitoba. Now, early in January, when President Trump issued his first executive order banning travel from people coming from seven terrorist-producing Muslim nations, our trust fund kid, our prime minister, tweeted Canada welcomed refugees of all religious backgrounds. Oh, you know, a big knee to the testicles to the American president, you know, where you see, we're the good guys, we let in anybody. Yeah, we're the international good time had by one and all. The ultimate party girl, but actually kind of fading and not much fun, really. Anyway, we are a connected world today. That quickly went through the Twitter sphere or the or the Jungle Telegraph. Yes, and well, people got the message. What is the message? We're open. Come on up. And so we began to have a steady stream, mostly of Haitians, coming up through the province of Quebec, trudging through snow-covered fields on an unsecured border. And the slamorama is this. There's a treaty between Canada and the United States called the First Safe Nation Treaty. And the understanding is this. If you are a foreigner and you show up in the United States and you decide you'd like to make an immigration or refugee claim, you must make it there. You can't traipse across the Canadian border and say, I think I'll go and make the refugee claim up in Canada, and vice versa. If you come to Canada and you want to make a refugee claim, you have to make it here, not go to the United States. And that makes sense. On the belief that both countries are very fair to people making refugee claims, I would say we bend over backwards, unfortunately. But anyway, be that as it may. If a person, let's say a Haitian who's living in the United States, comes up to a border crossing, let's say Niagara Falls, Ontario, and presents himself and gives us the good news, I want to make a refugee claim. My understanding is they'll be arrested or they'll be detained, and they will then be fairly quickly sent back because they'll be told you must make your claim back in the United States. Okay. That would all seem pretty straightforward. So what's happening? Well, what's happening is these so far over 7,000 illegals in just 2 months have streamed across the border into Quebec, but they don't cross at border crossings. See, all of this is programmed by smugglers and by community organizers. In fact, they even have taxis waiting for them on the Canadian side of the border. When they arrive by whatever means, train or bus, to an American border crossing, there are taxis already lined up to take them to the border. They don't take them to a border crossing. They just take them to a field. And they walk across the field. This line over here is the United States. A couple of yards away is Canada. And he would say, well, okay, but they should make the refugee claim in the United States. Absolutely. But due to a mischievous interpretation of the law, and the law is an ass, of course, what we say, I should say what our government says, is we don't know where you came from. And therefore, you've got the right to make a refugee claim because we don't know that you came from the United States. Where else might they have come from? A big bird may have picked them up in Iceland and dropped them on the border, and not likely. They fell out of a 727 jet from Port-au-Prince to Montreal. Probably not likely, eh? No, of course we know. And this is why we know the government's not serious. If the government was serious, it would change the interpretation. Or if it's a matter of legislation, and I don't believe it is, but if it were a matter of legislation, let me think, what would we do? This is a tough one. No, it's not tough. The Liberals have a majority. You recall Parliament, you pass legislation that clarifies it. That could all be done in one day, if the government were serious. But the government's not serious. You see, changing the population of this country, replacing the European founding settler people, or to put it bluntly, genocide against the white race. That's the agenda. That's what they're doing. Well, why would they want to stop it? Okay, and it will be true, not all of these Haitians, after 3 or 4 or 5 years, will be allowed to stay. And even those who will be found not qualified to be a refugee may be allowed to stay for any of a number of other reasons. So the bottom line is, in the end, most will get to stay. The illegals know it. The government knows it. And increasingly, the Canadian public know it. We are being scammed. Not just by the so-called refugees, not by the illegals. Yes, of course they're scamming us. But we are being double scammed by our scumbag political elite, particularly the Prime Minister, the trust fund kid, with an able assist from his from Ahmed Hassan, the immigration lawyer. Well, actually, it's not funny. And, even worse, by our Defense Department, led by a guy with a turban. I know! And they're standing on guard for who? India. No, they're supposed to be standing on guard for Canada. The Chief of the Defense Force. No, he doesn't wear a turban. His name is Jonathan Vance. I should say General Jonathan Vance. Well, what's he doing? Let me think. Oh, yes, a couple Sundays ago, he was prancing in the Ottawa Gay Pride Parade with none other than the trust fund kid, our Prime Minister, who was of whom pictures were taken with, I guess they're lesbians, but these were marchers. These women were essentially topless, and they had hearts painted on their nipples. Now, give me a break. I have no problem with nudity. I have no problem with the female body. But I do have a problem with the Prime Minister of my country in a polo shirt. An open neck shirt, looking like a complete jerk. And I was just thinking, you know, he calls himself a feminist, so I don't know what that makes him sexually, but so he's a feminist. But supposing a real he-man conservative was to go to a titty bar and be photographed with his arm around a couple of topless women. Well, it'd be a huge scandal. Oh, sexism, the women would be up in arms. Oh, sexism. Oh, exploitation. Even though it's a strip bar and you pay to go in there and the women are all there, you know, voluntarily to make money, etc., etc. It would be very, very embarrassing, to say the least. But here's the Prime Minister of our country. In public. There isn't the privacy of a strip club or that type of thing. It's in public. He has his arms around these two, whatever they are, essentially topless. I don't know if they were lesbians or what, but they're at the at the gay pride parade, so I assume they were not normal women. If it was any other situation, he'd be blamed. If this was a strip bar, he'd be blamed. And I fault him not only for encouraging the sexually mixed up, but I fault him doubly for this complete lack of gravitas or dignity. The Prime Minister of my country should not be parading in a gay pride parade, posing for pictures with half-naked people. This brings no credit to him, to this country, or to his office. Now, what he does for himself, it's his business. But as a representative of this country, as a prime minister, it's an embarrassment. In fact, it's hard to believe, to think of any previous prime minister of whatever party doing that. I cannot imagine one of the great liberal prime ministers of the 20th century, William Lyon Mackenzie King, who was very tough on immigration, marching in a gay pride parade. I can't imagine John Diefenbaker, the great conservative prime minister. I can't imagine Stephen Harper, for all his faults, and one of them being 110% Israel firster, and a great open-door immigration man as well. But nonetheless, these men all were able to conduct themselves with dignity in public. It's embarrassing. Anyway, what we were protesting was the complete lack of protection of our border. And in that we have, of course, our immigration minister. He's, in fact, basically he's AWOL. You hear hardly anything from him. We have the Minister of Defense. Now, he's also involved. He ought to be protecting the border. Well, he's not. What's the Canadian Armed Forces doing there? Building a wall. Nope. Building a fence. Nope. Well, at least having patrols, and when they see illegals coming, fix bayonets and let them know, I'm not here, go back, don't unpack, go back, go home. Go back to the United States, preferably go home to Haiti, but anyway, you're not coming here. No. What do they do? They're building tents, that's right, tents to house the illegals. So, the Army doesn't defend, the Minister of Immigration doesn't protect the border. We are in a state of serious moral decline, and the government is failing to do what governments ought to do, and this is the mark of a failing or failed state. Governments do things they're not supposed to do, for instance, like the act of promotion of the LGBT or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered agenda, lecturing us about Islamophobia. The Trust Fund kid's big on fighting that. Governments should not be in the business of telling us what to believe. Government, one of basic tasks, roles, definitions of a government is that it secures the territory of that country. What is a sovereign state? It's a one whose borders are protected which erects defenses against invasion. Now, the government may not always be able to succeed. Nations are invaded and nations are overrun, but any healthy nation at least tries to defend itself. And instead, we've got a government that encourages the invaders. That's the absurdity. Well, that's what we were out there protesting today, and we got to have a good video. It's in the process of being produced, and we'll have that up on the internet very soon. If you'd like to see this, you might want to email me. That's paul@paulfromm.com, paul@paulfromm.com. Or check it out on our immigration reform website called Canada First. And I'll give you the URL. It's http://. Canada First, all one long word, Canada First, .nfshost.com. So Canada First. nfshost.com, or just put in Canada First and it'll into a Google search and you'll probably find us. And so you'll be able to see my brief little talk there outside of the offices of Ahmed Hassan and some of our protesters there. We're very proud of the people who showed up, and it turned out to be a relatively busy road for motor traffic, and most people pass by with either didn't take notice or didn't respond. But of those who did, two-thirds were very positive. A number of people rolled down their windows and yelled out, "Right on," or "You're right," or "I agree," or things along those lines. We did have a couple of people who didn't agree. Interestingly, all of them white. One white woman was screaming hysterically at the several women in our protest, calling them white bitches. You wonder why would a female call another woman that? I don't know. And I think he was mixed race, but anyway, he came, drove up, and put down his window and said, "Well, ask what's this about?" I mentioned about the illegals. "Oh," he said, "you mean the people who are coming to Canada to seek freedom?" I said, "No, they've got freedom in the United States. They should make their refugee claim there. That's what the law says." "No, they're coming here to scam the system. You know, better welfare. They'll be on welfare and public housing for years while their application gets fought over." He drove off. And so there were a couple of people who didn't like what we were saying, but in general, the response was very good. But again, I'm not surprised. The public opinion polls say people are opposed to these people, opposed to the illegals. And this past week, the Liberal caucus met, that's the Liberal Members of Parliament, met in Kelowna in British Columbia, in the interior, a place I'm often find myself at. And at their kind of strategy session before the next session of Parliament opens, they heard that people are upset about a number of issues. One of the issues, not surprisingly, was the government's decision to pay Omar the Terrorist Khadr $10.5 million as a settlement. Omar Khadr had been a 15-year-old when he threw a grenade at an American medic in Afghanistan and blinded him. I'm sorry, killed him, and blinded another man in one eye. Khadr was then sent to Guantanamo. You might say, "Well, why would the Canadian government compensate? Are we in the business of funding terrorists?" Well, no, not directly, I guess, but Khadr had lived, I think, all of about 3 years in Canada before his terrorist father, who was a big fundraiser for Al-Qaeda, took them off to Afghanistan, Pakistan, actually, because he wanted to live in a more Sharia lifestyle. Well, I agree. Good idea. And stay there. But, of course, they don't stay. He came back every time he needed some medical attention, which was quite often. You know, mooch off the old Canadian taxpayers. Sure, Canada's the great Satan and all that, the corrupt, evil country, but it's good enough to pay our medical bills. Yeah, we allow this nonsense to happen. Anyway, Omar Khadr, he's the kid, was in this firefight. He got injured. His brother was crippled. Khadr Sr., the bagman for the terrorists, was killed. So Omar was sent to Guantanamo. And he eventually pleaded guilty to the murder of the American medic. Well, again, you may be scratching your head and wondering, how is it Canada owes this guy anything? Well, apparently our Security Intelligence Service, CSIS, was down there in Guantanamo and may have provided information that was detrimental to Omar. So anyway, that's how we owe him. Well, he was suing the Canadian government. Well, instead of fighting this tooth and nail, the trust fund kids decided to pay out $10.5 million. Actually, it was supposed to be a secret payment. It was supposed to be all confidential, but luckily the news leaked out, thank heavens. And the public came to know. But the public's upset about that. The second thing even the mainline press reported, was that a lot of people are upset by the sight of these illegals pouring across the Quebec border. I mean, there's something wrong here. How did they immediately qualify for, how did they create an obligation here in Canada? And that's a very good question. How did they create an obligation on our part, where we have to pay them, take care of them with welfare, Medicare, legal aid, public housing, job training, and so on? How does it become our responsibility because they've broken the law? Wouldn't it be better to prevent them from breaking the law? That is, by properly securing the border. And instead of welcoming them, to kick them out. Well, a lot of Canadians are having trouble getting their heads around the fact that that's not being done. And so the public mood continues to be angry and agitated. And I'm not surprised that we got a lot of good response from people today. That's where the heads of a lot of Canadians are. They're upset at the invasion of this country, and well, they might be. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you in just a couple of minutes with more news and views for our people. We're going to take a short musical interlude here, and I don't think we could have a better tune by Merle Haggard than America First. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. When we finally get this ad stopped, we'll have America First. And that's Merle Haggard, and that's America First. I guess we can all
I agree with that, with Merle. I'll play another tune here for the musical interlude. And I hope you like this one. It's one of my favorites. And that one too, but not this one. We do have problems with AV, don't we? I hope you like this one. This is Jimmy Fortune with a song made very popular by Johnny and June Carter Cash. This is called Far Side Banks of Jordan.
I believe my steps are growing wearier each day. Still I've got a journey on my mind. The lures of this old world have ceased to make me want to stay. And my one regret is leaving you behind. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. If it proves to be his will that I am first to cross, somehow I'll feel that it will be. When it comes your time to travel, likewise don't feel like I will be the first one that you'll see. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. Through this life we've labored hard to earn our meager fare. It's brought us trembling hands and failing eyes. So I'll just rest here on this shore and turn my eyes away. Until you come, then we'll see paradise. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. When I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand.
That's Jimmy Fortune, a tune made very, very popular by Johnny and June Carter Cash back in the late 70s, The Far Side Banks of Jordan. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on whiteresistanceradio.com. I'm going to play one more tune here. Hope you enjoy it. This is a very beautiful country western singer Rhonda Vincent with her mother Carolyn and her brother Darren and family. Teardrops Over You.
I'm so lonesome since you left me. I've been crying the whole night through. tomorrow. I'm gonna start my life all over. I'm gonna try to shake this pain here in my heart. I don't know if I'm ever gonna find someone like you again. But just for now, I'll cry more teardrops over you. You don't know the hurt I'm going through, and you can't see these tear stains on my cheek. I'd give anything to know.
That's Ron. That's Rhonda Vincent, her brother, and her mother, brother Darren, and mother Carolyn Vincent. Teardrops over you. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, kind of good news yesterday. Thursday afternoon, I got a call from the British Columbia Human Rights Commission. I wondered what's this all about, and. I was told, well, tomorrow, that was Friday, that the tribunal was going to announce whether CAFE, that's my group, the Canadian Association for Free Expression, would be granted intervener status in the Watcott case. And this has been quite important to us. We've fought quite hard for this intervener status. What it means is it's a little bit like the category of amicus curiae, or friend of the court, in an American trial. And this is an important free speech case. My good friend Bill Watcott, he's a Christian preacher, a strong opponent of abortion, and a strong opponent of the homosexual lobby. He faces a hearing, or a tribunal, I should say, in British Columbia, because of remarks he made during the recent election. This is important for a number of reasons. It's a freedom of speech issue, of course. It's also freedom of religion. I'd even say it's political freedom. And what Watcott did in the most recent May 2017 provincial election was that he handed out literature in a riding in downtown Vancouver where the Socialist Party candidate, or the NDP candidate, as the party is called, was a transgendered named Auger, that's his last name. And Auger was running for the Socialists, and the media was widely hailing him as the first transgender candidate, and very likely the first elected transgendered, elected to the British Columbia Legislature, maybe even the first transgendered in Canada, if he was elected. Well, he was given a reasonably good chance of being elected. It was a Liberal riding, but not by much. And the trend was going against the Liberals, particularly in the city of Vancouver. So it was a winnable riding for Auger, as weird as he is. And Auger is a bumbling-looking individual. He was born a male, was married, has several children, has body hacked up, but now dresses like a female and insists on being called Morgan. No, Morgan with an E. Auger
was made no bones about the fact he was transgendered. He traded on it. He was the head of a transgendered association. He lobbied boards of education and so on. So, I mean, he was out there and quite public about it. Now, what Bill Watcott had done was that he handed out literature in the riding, which has a large homosexual component, incidentally, and handed out literature in which he criticized O'Shea, in which he said, this man is morally and mentally mixed up, that he cannot call himself a female, he's a male, both on religious grounds, that he's, you know, living in sin, on basically biological or cultural grounds. Not a woman. He may think he is, he may want to say he is, but he's not a woman. So, and he further suggested that if O'Shea cannot even get his own sex right, is he really fit to be a member of the British Columbia Legislature? I mean, if he's got his head in a weird place on that, can you really trust somebody like this to spend your money? You know, I mean, is he really fit to be an elected member of the British Columbia Legislature? Now, I think those are all very good reasons, good questions, and they're all very good points. Now they're debatable. Anyway, poor old O'Shea, well, he was very unhappy. the result was the Liberal member of the provincial legislature for that riding was re-elected. And O'Shea was furious. And O'Shea quite quickly brought a complaint before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, alleging that he'd been discriminated against by Bill Watcott, that he and his dignity had been hurt and that his feelings were hurt, and he wanted compensation. Yeah, that's what they all want. They want some money. Lay some money on me. Consolation prize. I lost the election. It's all your fault. Well, perhaps we'll never know what impact Bill Watcott's leaflets had. Certainly, in one building, two beefy lesbians came after him and physically shoved him out of the building. He was spat at, cursed. All the political parties denounced him. Yeah, typical, scummy, gutless people. on the other hand, he said, a number of Chinese people who received the leaflet seemed quite concerned, but in a good way. The Chinese are fairly traditional sexually. They're not into the transgendered nonsense. they figure if you're born a female, if you're born a male, that you're a male. Yeah, I mean, what used to be common morality, regardless of your ethnicity or race, up until practically the day before yesterday. Anyway, Watcott thinks that some of these people perhaps were motivated enough to go out and vote for anybody but O'Shea, or may have been leaning toward the socialists but decided to vote for the incumbent rather than to have O'Shea. Unfortunately, this is unprovable. Did Watcott affect the election? As I say, perhaps we'll never know. Anyway, O'Shea was sufficiently annoyed about it that he decided he was going to file this complaint. And that's why CAFE wanted to get involved. First of all, of course, we don't believe in human rights laws. We don't believe in restrictions on freedom of speech. That's part of it. But more specifically, Watcott was simply exercising his rights as a citizen to participate in politics. He put out this literature involving himself in the political process, and arguing essentially that because O.J. had his head messed up on sexuality, that he was not a fit person for office. Now, that's an opinion. You know, other people might have a completely different opinion. Fair enough, but that was his opinion, and that's what politics are all about: an argument as to who should be the representative of a particular area. And arguments often will center on two areas. One will be policy, and why a person's policies are good or bad. And the other is character. We would like to think that our elected representatives have achieved some standard of character. And of course, this differs from person to person. Nobody is naive enough to think that our elected representatives are saints, and we probably don't require them to be saints. But we probably are looking for some degree of mental stability, some degree of integrity. Watcott said he didn't think Morgan O.J., that's the way it would like to be known, but was born a male, but this individual had the moral integrity to be a representative. Now, that's an opinion. So we're going to be arguing for the widest possible latitude for political opinion. That's what it is. Secondly, Morgan was made its sexuality an issue. It ran as a transgendered. It held itself forth as a spokesman for the transgender. So it wasn't as if Bill Watcott did an expose on some poor, inoffensive person living down the hall in an apartment building. This is a public matter. O.J. made a point of his transgenderism, and Watcott took a stand on that, a moral, a religious stand, that it's wrong, that you cannot deny what God created. Now, not everybody agrees with that, but that's his religious view. But also, maybe as a scientific or secular view, Watcott believed that transgenderism is a form of mental illness, a form of delusion. And whether it's culpable or not, that gets us into the religious end of things. If this guy is deluded about his sexuality, then Watcott argued, it's not likely that he will be a good people's representative. So we're going to be arguing, this is a freedom of speech issue, it's a religious issue, it's also a political issue. That it was entirely proper for Watcott, if he had the opinions on the matter, to get in there and duke it out. Just like, I'm sure there were people in the homosexual lobby that thought it was a wonderful thing that this transgendered creature was running for public office and would very hopefully be elected. That's the political process. Well, anyway, yesterday we got the word the cafe was accepted, and we will be able to call witnesses, we'll be able to make written and oral submissions, and cross-examine witnesses. So we're looking for an exciting time on the cutting edge of trying to beat back the craziness that infects our society today, would treat the transgendered as anything other than pathetic, deluded people. And people that we should not have to worry or kowtow to them about their feelings. For instance, if I wake up deluded one day and believe I am the Emperor Napoleon and proclaim to my fellows and the people down at the coffee shop and so on, I'm Napoleon, if they can stop laughing at this latest nonsense, But if I were to say, no, it's for real, I really do, I am the Emperor Napoleon, I can't expect them to say, oh, yes, Emperor, oh, yeah, whatever you want, Emperor. Can we go and feed your horse, Emperor? Come on. Just because I'm mentally ill doesn't mean you've got to play in my sandbox. And that's the dangerous area that we're drifting into in the area of the transgender. So we'll be on the fight, on the front lines, we'll be on the in this fight, backing Bill Watcock all the way. Well, that's a small problem. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.